I believe life is one big spiritual creative experience, and everything that we do, whether it's start a business, write a book, fall in love, or I don't know, pull a bunch of tarot cards, has a little spiritual lesson wrapped up inside of it. I'm obsessed with trying to understand the mysteries of the world from the arcane to the mundane and unboxing as many spiritual lessons as I can. And on the 12th house, we're going to explore all of that. So let's get into it together.
Hi, welcome to the 12th House Podcast. I'm Michelle Pelazon Lipsitz, your head witch in charge, founder of Holisticism, coiner of the term squiggly brain, squiggly entrepreneur, squiggly creative. Welcome. I'm so happy that you're here and really excited for today's episode because we're going to talk about spiritual practices. And I feel as if it's been a while since we've talked about them. And now, listen, I have to be honest, just a nasty little slut for other people's spiritual practices. I want to know everything that you're doing. I like want the play-by-play. I want to hear about what exactly you do and how you do it and why does it matter to you and what are you learning and what are you thinking about and what time do you do it? What kind of incense are you burning? I am unwell in that way that I like to just envision, like, what are you up to? And I don't know, maybe you can relate to this, but I'm always thinking in the back of my mind, although I know it's not true, I'm like, but what if there is one just secret master key that like is the thing that everyone should be doing? Honestly, it's probably meditation or morning pages or just like drinking water, which is so annoying. But I'm like, what if it's something special, like this weird tea and spinning in a circle 17 times and then throwing some runes and that will unlock the keys to the universe and I'll know everything. I just love to hear about what other people are up to. And I like to hear what they're doing honestly, because when it comes to my spiritual practices, I really admire people who have a consistent practice that they have upkept for years. Like Twyla Tharp, if you read her book, The Creative Habit, she like wakes up every day at, I think, 5. Oh, she makes like a black coffee. She hails a cab. She goes down to the exact same gym. She does her hour and a half long workout routine. She hails the cab back to her apartment. She does the exact same thing every single morning. And she's done it that way for decades at this point. And I'm so impressed by people like that who just can eat like the same thing for breakfast every day. Like, that's amazing. You are so much better than me. And I'm not saying that facetiously. You are, because like, you don't need novelty. And that's probably really good. You probably are good at budgeting. I wish I was like that. And I'm not. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't have discipline in practice, which like you're listening and you're probably like maybe similar to me. So I'm not saying that we don't have discipline, far from it. And I'm not saying that we don't practice. Again, not true. But what I do know about myself is that my spiritual practices are ebbing and flowing all the time, like water. And depending on what I need, they're responsive to me, or I'm responsive to them, or I'm responsive to the world at large. And I'm pulling the tools from my toolkit that I need at any given time. And I was thinking a lot about this because another truthy moment, I'm recording this on April 8th, which is the full solar eclipse, which means I'm only 3 weeks ahead on the podcast, which is not good. I'm in trouble with myself, giving me a little bit of anxiety. I like to be 4 weeks ahead. But I'm recording this on the day of the eclipse, which this eclipse actually had the same path of totality 7 years ago. So we had a really similar solar eclipse. And I was thinking about what I was doing 7 years ago. Like, obviously, eclipses, maybe not obviously, sorry. I'm trying not to say obviously because it comes off as condescending, although I never mean it that way. I say it as a filler word and I got to stop doing it. So eclipses are about cycles. They happen in a family, in a group. So this eclipse that we just had is the fourth of 6 eclipses that are in the same theme that have been happening from 2023 into 2025. And we can also look back on when the last time, like this was in Aries. So when was the last time that there was an eclipse in Aries? Okay. There is some theme or concept that we're revisiting or that's being illuminated or that's being agitated that we're meant to look at. Eclipses are great for that. They're wonderful for adjusting the focus and really questioning, stress testing our ideas or what we're working on, what we're going through. It's like giving yourself an earthquake or giving your building an earthquake. So I was thinking about what was I doing 7 years ago? Like what was in my life? What did my life look like? It was so different. I was actually throwing an eclipse co-working party for Holisticism. It was like the year of Holisticism. And on a roof in Koreatown when the solar eclipse happened. was thinking about how different my life was and what my practices were at that time. I was really into the Akashic Records. I was really into like waking up at 5 a.m. and lighting incense, like just sitting in silence for like 2 hours and giving myself a tea ceremony and then writing my morning pages and pulling a tarot card and journaling on all of it. And it was wonderful. And that is not at all what my practice is today. And I'm okay with that. But I figured it was time to talk about, first off, just give you an update. What's Michelle doing? But also maybe helpful for you to think about, what are you practicing and doing that's useful for you? And maybe what needs to be left behind in eclipse fashion. I know you're listening to this much later. The eclipse is coming on. But what is not serving you anymore? Because it can be, I'll speak from the eye here, really easy for me to get into almost like superstition when it comes to spiritual practice or when it comes to any sort of ritual. I used to be so superstitious when I was a little kid because that's how little kids think, I think. I don't know. That's how I thought as a little kid. I always believed in magic. Like I used to make these little totems before I would have an audition when I was really young, like let's say from 12 to like 15. I would make these little totems for myself out of clay and then I'd put them in the oven. In fact, I have a burn on my arm from the time that I tried to make one by myself. Like this, it's like the length of my forearm. As like good luck charms, I would make these like weird good luck charms for myself and I'd bring them into my auditions. And if I didn't have them, like if I didn't have all my good luck charms, then I was very worried that what I wanted to happen wouldn't happen. So I've always been like superstitious and definitely believed in magic and impact and intention, but also been superstitious. And I feel as if when I let my spiritual practices, like when I forget how sovereign I am, that's what can happen to me really easily. Things ricochet and they take a hold of me. And instead of practicing, let's say, the tarot, pulling the tarot because it's illuminating to me, I feel as if I must do it and I can't skip or else something bad is going to happen or this is just what I do and I have to pull a card every day. Even if I'm not really paying attention to the card or not really thinking about it or 5 minutes later, I totally forget what I even pulled. I'm doing it without being conscious. I still feel as if I've got to do it, like running through the motions. I notice the same thing happen for me when it comes to health stuff too. Like, oh, I'm going to drink this special tonic every morning and even though it tastes really bad. And then eventually I run out of the juice, whatever it is, the rhodiola. And I'm like, wait a second, that's really expensive and it doesn't taste good. Is it actually helping me? Do I like this? And it's, you know, been 6 months since I've been using this thing every morning and I haven't really investigated whether I think it's useful or not. So I think that it's good to audit your spiritual practices, your any practice that you have, right? Your business practices too, and decide what's working for you. You can do the 80-20 rule if you need some sort of framework. We have a whole episode on this, but the 80-20 rule says that 20% of our actions yield 80% of our outcomes. So 20% of the soccer players score 80% of the goals on the field. 20% of the tasks that you take on or that you complete today yield 80% of your profit tomorrow. And I think it's probably similar in the practices that we have and rituals that we have at home too. So that's all to say that it's generally spring and a good time to just check in with ourselves and say, okay, what's working for me and maybe what's not working for me anymore. And I've done lots of things. Like I said, I used to have a like 3 hour morning routine where I would do like an hour of Kundalini yoga and then I'd do silent meditation and then I'd journal and then I'd pull a tarot card and then I'd give myself a tea ceremony and it went on and on and it was wonderful. But that's not my life anymore right now. And there are a couple things that I'm really thinking about a lot as my spiritual practice and that are challenging me in a good way, bringing me closer to myself. So I wanted to get into those. Let's see, what have I got here? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, I've got 6 spiritual practices that I am practicing right now. The first is sigil tattoos. So I started doing sigil tattoos. Let me walk it back. I really got into sigil magic. I just thought it was the coolest thing. I hated most of the sigils that I saw online that were like New Age Wicca sigils. They just didn't vibe with me. But I loved the idea that a sigil is a visual spell. So instead of saying something out loud or writing it down, you could look at this image and that would activate the intention or the spell. It reminded me of like something magical that you would see, like even like in Lord of the Rings, the way that the ring lights up when you look at the elven text on the inside. I imagine that's what a sigil spell was like. And so I wanted to start writing my own and practicing and trying them on. So that goes back to 2018 for me, practicing sigils. And I used to put them in my coffee in the morning. I would draw a sigil on the foam of my foamed milk, or I'd put it in cinnamon, or I'd even stir in a specific way. So I was like drawing on it. I draw sigils into my food. There are sigils in Reiki symbols that people use on each other, on themselves, for healing. There's this practice called biogeometry signatures by this Egyptian architect. And he uses sigils for health and well-being. And his book is really wild, but it's really good. It's really interesting if you want to like double click on sigils that aren't of the sort of like Wicca set. And there's nothing wrong with Wicca symbols. You just, if you're like me, maybe you don't get it. You're not into it. And I just thought, man, sigil magic is so fucking cool. I can draw this on my computer. I can put these on post-it notes on my desk. I can make them anywhere. And then I started thinking about where else we use sort of pictographs to represent something, and was like obsessed with the idea of using emojis as sigil spells and putting together emojis in a specific way and having it mean something to me, blasting intention into it, and then putting that on the internet. And practice that in digital spells, our Notion for Magical Baddies class. And finally, I was like, why don't I make a sigil that's a tattoo? Like, why don't I have something that's on my body forever? And this is not a new concept. There are probably millions of people that have sigils tattooed on their bodies. And honestly, if you have a tattoo that's meaningful to you, or that you want to be a reminder of something that has an intention behind it, that's a sigil. You maybe just haven't used that terminology. So I started using sigil tattoos right before I got pregnant with my son. I made a little sigil for him, or for whatever, for fertility. And that's not necessarily the reason that we got pregnant, but it was a happy coincidence. And ever since, I've just been into the idea of adding these little sigils onto my body. And my second one is two people on holding hands on either side of the veil of the realm. You know, it's a little personal, but I recently have been on my mediumship journey for the last year, working with different mentors and practicing. And that was part of what my homework was for working with my teacher, Mary. She invited me to set my intentions for what I wanted to do in my mediumship and to say it out loud. And I was like, you know what? I not only need to say it out loud, I need to create a sigil for it to remind myself of it. So those sigil tattoos are the newest additions to the fam. I had a couple sigils that were actually ephemeral tattoos, so they faded away, and the rest are permanent. So yeah, my ephemeral tattoo has lasted for like 2 years, which is crazy because it's supposed to fade away after a year, but it's definitely fading and I'm sure it will be totally gone soon, which means it's time to get more. But I'm super into the sigil tattoos. Huge fan. Love them. Okay. Next spiritual practice is boring, but I'm going to say it is scent, anything with scent. If you have listened to our episodes on archetypes, you've heard me wax poetic about how trying a different perfume or wearing a different scent is one of the easiest ways to embody an archetype, at least for me, like to just immediately step into a different version of myself. Honestly, that's my biggest archetype hack, or my biggest like timeline collapsing hack, is have different perfumes and know what they mean to you. In fact, Andy Warhol used to rotate his cologne every 3 months because he wanted to have like clear memories associated with different scents. And he didn't want them to be muddied, because we really can have such a strong sensual association with the olfactory senses. And that sounds, I feel like I just sounded so stupid saying that, but you get what I'm saying, right? Like, scent is important. And I don't think it's a coincidence that like most every culture has some sort of like smoke or incense to transport to another level. I mean, listen, I went to Catholic school, so incense is big. Incense has always been a thing that I really like. I ride hard for Copal. I think that something happens in the time-space continuum when you burn Copal. I love it. I use it on little coals personally. And I just feel like as soon as I start burning Copal, like my third eye, my crown chakra, something opens up and it's super clear. I also feel really safe when I burn Copal. I just feel like it clears out the space energetically. It just makes everything really feel really like crisp and clean and like the right, not to sound weird, the right frequency. I can't say enough about it. And I'd stopped doing it for a little while. Like I had a little baby at home and I was really sensitive to scents when I was pregnant. And my husband doesn't really like when I burn stuff at home, and I was home a lot. So it just wasn't happening the same way. And now that I'm more in the studio and outside a little bit more, I feel like I have a little more free reign over my scented dominion. And I can't tell you what a change, like a true change it makes for me to even just like, if I'm going to journal while there's some incense brewing in the background, makes a world of difference for me. I really like I said, White Copal. You can get it at I get it at Wild Terra, which is down the street, which is an herbalism store in Highland Park. I also really like, this is expensive, but the Aesop incense, there's a scent. All of them are really good, but I like the sandalwood, clove, and cinnamon scent. It's amazing. And you get a box that, I don't know how many are in here. It's lasted me a really long time. Okay. The burn time is 30 minutes per stick. And there's like, I don't know, there's a lot of sticks in here, y'all. I recommend it. It smells amazing. All of the scents are amazing. We have another one out in the desert, in our desert house, that I brought out there, but I'm almost out of this one and I feel as if I need to re-up because it's just fantastic. So scent cleansing, I know it sounds silly, but changing your space, or at least for me, changing my space and the like frequency of my space, either with sound or with scent, has been a reliable part of my spiritual practice for a really long time. And I go in and out of using like binaural beats or chanting or bells or something like that to cleanse my space with sound. And same thing with scent, obviously. But right now I'm really on a scent kick. So there you go. Next thing is Matrix of Destiny. I'm just such an obsessee of the Matrix of Destiny. I'm like reading for everyone I know. I'm getting to read for so many people. I actually have some spots open for readings on my calendar, which is really fun. And I feel like every time I have the privilege of opening up someone's chart, I really do get to channel and connect to something. And I also get to like tap into their energy. And I feel like that type of practice helps me stay really spiritually clear, or helps me stay on my intuition game personally. Just actually being in the doing of it as opposed to the preparation. I can get so caught up in like having to get everything perfect and organized and like, yeah, the right smells and the right binaural beats and it has to be the perfect time of day and blah, blah, blah. But like sometimes you just got to do it, which gets me into my next thing, which is trance. I have been thinking about trance mediumship. If you want to hear more about it, it's in the 12th House Plus episodes, because I'm not like super ready to talk about this stuff out in the world. But I have been thinking a lot about trance and researching trance dance, trance and music, and how dropping into trance is it is an integral part of many spiritual practices. And there's like so many different ways that we can drop into a trance. Watching TV, we can drop into a trance. Listening to an amazing Beyonce album, we can drop into a trance. Chopping vegetables, we can drop into a trance. Walking outside, scrolling on our phones. There are so many different ways. I'm trying personally to do more walking and getting in trance mode. I'm also doing a lot of work with my hands lately. I've been taking a ceramics class for the last couple of months. I've been sewing a lot. I've been crocheting, back to some stuff that I used to do when I was really young. And I noticed myself drop into just like trance mode when I'm doing that, when I'm allowing it. And there are these little soft thoughts and soft ideas that sort of float into my brain when I'm in a trance. Even going to dance class, I find drops me into a trance state where I'm not thinking about anything and I'm just doing. And it's that quiet, that mental quiet allows these, you know, ideas to drop in. And it's different to me than being bored. Like when I go to my workout class and I'm bored, that's something different. It's almost like my brain is working on a different frequency when I'm bored. It's my brain's like trying to come up with problems or something, or it's solving problems in the background, versus trance is almost like my brain has left the building. and because there's some empty space up there, some other little birdies of concepts are like coming in and making a nest in my mind. So I've been just really thinking about how I can offer myself more opportunities to like drop into that trance state, even if it's for 30 seconds, doing something like rocking my heels on the floor or getting in the bathtub or getting on the swing at the park and like just bumping my legs. I'm just thinking about all that. And meditation and chanting. Chanting is another way that you can get into trance. If you've ever done Kundalini yoga, you know about that. There are some other Buddhist practices that are involved chanting in trance, and there's a lot to think about there, but reminding myself that like my spiritual practice doesn't need to be so intellectual. It doesn't have to be like journaling and reading and studying like intensely. It can just be smooth brain vibes. And that's actually really important. And then my last thing is potion making. Love to make a potion. I'm back on my potion shit. It's been a moment for me. I go in and out of like blending herbs together. I have to be honest with you. I don't really like the way that a lot of herbs taste. Like I'm the type of person where I like my Bengal spice tea. It's this like dopey ass tea that I get from like Celestial Seasonings or something. I love it. I like the raspberry zinger. If tea were juice, like that's what I like. I'll drink an Earl Grey. I'll drink a chai, but I like some flavor. I don't love tasting twigs. And like a lot of the powerful herbs are very twig-like. They're super earthy. Do they taste great? No, they don't. So it can be hard for me. I have some big dreams of, you know, putting together herbs and in some sort of collection. And then I'm like, yeah, these are great. These are so good together. And then I go to drink it. I'm like, gag, that tastes like bog water. That's not good. Bog or bong. Like it's objectively bad. I have all my potion making tools and I can force myself to drink these potions, but I don't want to. So instead of being like, what's the most potent thing? Like, what can I put together according to like herbalism rules that's the most potent? I'm just trying to be a little bit more intuitive about it and be like, well, what would taste good? Like, what would be nice with a couple slices of orange in it? And it doesn't have to have 10 different properties. I can just have like one little herb in there. It's fine. It's fine. I'm thinking of that and doing that for myself. And actually, I love to make a tea at night. I love to have a long conversation over a tea. I like to finish a dinner with tea. And I'm really into the idea of making potions right now that are my own little blends of herbs and fruits and plants from our garden and different spices that have a sort of like Michelle twist on them, like my little tea for happiness, my tincture for happiness. And it doesn't have to have all the happy herbs in it. It can just be, it tastes good. And like maybe there's one herb in there that promotes some ease. So I am playing around with that, playing around with potions, but there are some OG herbs that I go back to all the time. Go to Kulu, Rhodiola, pine pollen, alfalfa, chickweed, schizandra berry, rose hips. Oh my God, I like live and die by rose hips. When I see rose hips in the wild, I'm like, I want to steal these, but I probably shouldn't. I should probably just go buy them from Wild Terra. There are so many Damiana. There are so many herbs that I like, just chamomile that I love. And I just love them all so much that I want to put them all in the same thing, but that's kind of not my flow right now. So I'm trying to be a little bit more minimalist, I guess, and just maybe culinary about it. Just make things that taste good and know that part of it just tasting good means I'm going to do it. And I think that's maybe what I'm getting to the crux of here is it has to be fun. It has to be enjoyable because if it's not, then I'm not going to do it. So self-flagellation in the form of pulling a tarot card every day and thinking about how bad I am, that's not going to work out for me. It just doesn't. But having a fun tarot card pull might. So that's what I'm doing right now. That's my practice. Some things that I'd like to commit to more are obviously meditation because I know how good it is for me. And also it's really hard. It's really hard for me and it's not enjoyable while I'm doing it, but it feels great afterwards. And the other thing I'd like to commit to more is just being in the desert because we have this beautiful artist residency space in Wonder Valley. And every time I'm out there, it's so spiritually quiet. Like you don't need to do anything to get clear. You just have to be. You just have to walk outside and you will hear spirits. You will hear the universe. You will hear the muse. Everything that you need to hear, you will hear. So that's a nice refresher of palate cleanser. Like, oh yeah, you don't need all these bells and whistles to be connected to yourself. You just get to exist. And that's the goal, is to not have all of these different, I don't know, things that we have to do to hear our own intuition, to hear the thing that's with us all the time. And that being said, some of this is so fun. It should be fun. And ritual and creating ritual for ourselves, it reminds us of the magic in the everyday. Like, I love the magic in the mundane when that magic happens. It happens all the time. We just don't always notice it. And ritual can allow for us to take a pause and notice the magic that is around us, that's flickering and glittering and in the air constantly. And it just, you have to make your life special. Do you know what I mean? Like, you have to have something to live for. At least I feel as if I have to. You don't have to do anything. I feel as if I have to have something to live for. I have to be excited about something. I have to be excited about lots of things in order to continue on, because like, it's just too damn hard otherwise, if there's nothing to look forward to. And I think that my spiritual practices, like, they help me look forward to existing, to being, and they make me feel at home in myself at their best. I'm not really looking to like tell the future. Sometimes when I'm really scared, I'm hoping to tell the future, but that's not really the point for me. The point is to just be reminded of who I am all the time and to be as close to my power as I can be. Let me give you a story and then I'll let you go. But when I'm so bored of like, you're probably so bored of me talking about having a baby. So I'm going to try and keep it really tight, but it's the best story that I have, most recent story I have of forgetting about my power. Okay. Maybe it'll resonate with you. So when I was giving birth, I was going through the process and it was getting icky, sticky, and not so good and very scary. And to the point where the doctors were like, you're going to have a C-section if something huge doesn't happen within, you know, the next hour, basically. I was like, I don't know, 4 centimeters dilated, and I'd been stuck there for 13 hours. I was like, damn, I don't want that to happen, just because that sounds really scary. There's nothing wrong with getting a C-section, because all that really matters is that you have a healthy birth. And I was feeling really defeated and I didn't want to feel that way. I wanted to feel empowered. It's like, okay, I'm really scared. I'm going to cry right now because this doctor's yelling at me and this sucks. And then I just had this moment where I was like, wait a second, dude, you're a witch. Like, you got this. And I, in that moment, was able to come back into what I felt was my power, which is I can do this. No matter what happens, I know and trust myself. And I know and trust my own power, for lack of a better term. I know I keep saying it. And it didn't really matter what the result was, if we ended up getting to a C-section or not, having a vaginal delivery. It didn't matter. What mattered was, in that moment, being able to come back to myself and say, wait a second, I've got this and I'm going to be okay no matter what. And I don't need to be like, feel defeated. I need to remember who I am. I'm a powerful witch and I can move energy and I can shift things, and I get to decide in this moment how this shifts. And it doesn't necessarily mean I get to decide what happens next, but I get to decide how I respond to it. And thankfully, what ended up happening was Rhodes was born an hour later. So things moved along, and visualization was really powerful in that moment, and worked, was part of, I think, what worked for me in that moment. But it wasn't really, again, about the outcome. It was more about the shift in my own perception of myself and coming back to myself after feeling so disempowered for and so out of my body for many hours and for much of, honestly, my experience of being pregnant. It was like, I like snapped back into consciousness in that moment. I was like, oh shit, yeah, this is who I am. Anyways, that to me is the point of spiritual practice. It's to remind you when you're like drinking a cup of sunshine that you make for yourself. It's like, wait, I'm sunshine. It's me. I feel this way about myself. When you're pulling a tarot card that's giving you information, it's like, oh yeah, I can see myself and I can see information in this. I can see information for me, lessons for me in anything that I look at if I decide to. And this is a beautiful case study of that, looking at this gorgeous tarot card. Clearing the energy of a space with smoke. I can do that if I am connected to myself and committed to really, truly being in touch with the space around me and the people around me. And it's nice to have a friend that's like a little smoke wafting around about to visually remind me of that and to lean on to help me with that. It doesn't feel like I'm always doing the heavy lifting. But I'm getting a little bit off on my soapbox here. So I'm going to step off of it now. And I think I'm going to leave you with that, because I think that's it. Some spiritual practices I'm going to leave behind. I feel as if like I do leave them behind. I think for me, my test is always going to be, I like to go extreme. So I like to do like 3 hours of silent meditation because I'm like, it's 3 hours. 3 hours is better than an hour, and an hour is better than 5 minutes, which is not true because maybe sometimes it's true. Everything is better than zero. So 5 minutes is definitely better than 0 minutes of meditation. Now, is 3 hours of meditation better than 5 minutes? Who's to say? I don't know. It probably depends on the case study. But I tend to go to extremes. So that's what I want to leave behind. And when I'm looking at myself from 7 years ago, finally landing the plane on this eclipse thing, that was definitely the headspace I was in. I had to do things perfectly. I had to, before I left the house, I had to cleanse myself. When I got home, I had to cleanse myself. I needed to make sure that my crystals were out in the moon every full moon. I needed to drink the potions in the right order and the XYZ date and blah, blah, blah. And it was so rigid and I was losing the forest for the trees. It was important during that time in my life and I learned from it, but that's not the most important thing to me right now. In fact, the most important thing for me right now is to not be so rigid and not be so extreme, because you can still get results without like going to the ends of the earth. And the thing about a spiritual practice, at least for me, is not about getting results. It's not about the outcome. It's about just coming back to my own power and noticing it in other people too. So that's it. That's what I've got for you today. I hope that was useful. And I hope that you liked today's episode. I'd love to hear from you. What is in your spring cleaning toolkit? Oh, last thing I'm going to add is I am researching more things to add to my toolkit always. And something in particular that I'm researching myself right now are runes. I'm just really into them. And I'm reading a book on the throwing of bones. And I'm also really curious about that practice. So I'm thinking about that right now and thinking about like, ooh, what can be in my little curio of throwing the bones, because it's a totally fascinating and interesting and makes total intuitive sense to me concept. Throwing of bones, you should Google it. It shows up in lots of different cultures. It's great. The book that I'm reading is called Bones, Shells, and Curios, A Contemporary Method of Casting the Bones by Michelle Jackson, and I recommend it. She is an artist, diviner, and skilled root worker who lives in Southern California, and she teaches bone divination in person and online, and this book is great. It's pretty simple, and she lists all of her teachers, and it's really interesting. So I think you should check it out if you're curious about it. And I haven't yet added that to my spiritual practice. Maybe I will, maybe I won't, but it's in my little research doc. That's it. I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. And if you want to hear more stuff like this, you should definitely check out the 12th House Plus. It's our bi-monthly, members only, episodes. Every month we put out one green room episode, come on, Peloton, that's a little behind the scenes with me and sometimes with a friend. And we also put out an audio course every month. And there are, honestly, there are a lot of episodes now in the backlog that you can immediately get access to the moment you join. So you can sign up on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts, and it's $5 a month. All right. I think that's all. I hope you have a great rest of your day and that you like this episode. Tell me what your spiritual practices are that during this season of your life. I would love to hear. As I said, I'm a nosy little bitch, so I want to know everything that you're up to. Tell me all about it and share it with me and send pictures and send them my way. And we'll just like we'll be witches together and we'll share all of our little spellish things. Okay, that's all I have. I hope you have a good rest of your day. I'll talk to you soon. I love you. Bye. The 12th House is produced by the Holisticism team, with theme music by Nathan McKay and edited by the incredible Softer Sound Studio, who you can find more information about in our show notes. Thanks for listening.